This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
If Florida State will win national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Calvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something, I can really do this.
Game over! Noles are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
And welcome to the Unconquered Podcast, now on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, and as always, in association with NoleDigest.com. Bringing you all Florida State all the time. I'm your host, Jason Staples, and I'm joined today by Wayne McGahee III from NoleDigest.com. Now, Florida State just opened preseason camp, so we've got a lot of stuff to talk about today, but we will start with a short recruiting update to get everybody up to speed, and then we'll take a little bit of a look at what to expect in camp from each side of the ball and talk a little bit about initial impressions and observations from the first couple days of camp. So, Wayne, good to have you with us. Trey, of course, as you're known, off of the Noel Digest boards.
Good to be here, Jason.
All right, so also before we get into it, I want to remind everybody to download actually two new iOS apps. First, Seminole Sports Radio's free iOS app, which is the best way to listen to this show specifically, although you, of course, can listen to us on NoleDigest.com or on vsporto.com online. But also to download the new Noel Digest app, the new Scout.com app, I guess it is, which will plug you right into to Noel Digest as well. This should be releasing today, or it's either just released or will be releasing very shortly. So a couple new iOS apps to download if you are on the Apple devices. Those, of course, are necessary if you want to be up on the best Florida State sports stuff. So now that we've got that stuff out of the way, let's talk a little bit about recruiting. And obviously, the Florida State class took a little bit of a nutshot not too long ago with the defection of, honestly, at this point, I think you could make a case that he's the best player in the recruiting class at that point, and that's Isaac Nauta, which, you know, obviously, like I said, a big nut shot. I don't know that he's got the best potential of all the guys that were in the class at that time, but I think at this point, right now, as we stand, he's probably the best player. Go ahead and give us an update on that, Wayne, and we'll talk about what where Florida State moves from here.
Yeah, it's definitely a big blow. In my opinion, was one of the top five players in the country. I've never seen a more dominant tight end in high school, and I've been around this business for a very long time. He's extremely fluid. He's physical. He understands the game, and like I said, it's just a massive, massive blow. Florida State's being negatively recruited right now, and I mean, as you can see with Nauta and with Shavar Manuel, who just came out and said Florida State's a mess right now.
Yeah, and he was, of course, considering considering LSU and Florida,
yes,
and a couple other programs, and you wonder, wait, didn't LSU just reinstate a guy who hit a woman today, as in?
Yes, they did, and they've had five players arrested this summer. Florida State has had one player arrested in the past year. Well, I'm sorry, two.
If you include Dalvin Cook, which, you know, that doesn't look like at this point it's going to stick at any rate, and there are a lot of questions about that. But either way, let's include that. And I think, in fairness, we should. That's two players. But clearly, Florida State's a mess and is out. You know, it's a program out of control, apparently, according to the perception of 18-year-olds who watch a lot of ESPN, which is understandable.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like – and the problem is that Florida State's not doing anything to counteract it. Jimbo and company are too proud to go out there and negative recruit other places. They do their best to combat it, you know, just saying, hey, this is not how it is. But when it comes down to it, it's a he said, she said, and Jimbo and company aren't really ready to get their hands dirty.
Yeah, you know, at the same time, though, I think that actually, once you get a kid back on campus, that's where, you know, somebody like Shavar Manuel, when you get him back on campus and he visits again and he looks around after, you know, things have died down a little bit, you got to think that that's going to have some impact as he looks around and says, you know what, this isn't a mess. when he gets there. And you know, he gets to see sort of how things are. It's one thing to hear it. So in that sense, the negative recruiting can kind of backfire on you when you when you're saying different things and then the kid actually gets there and it doesn't look like what he expected it to. And again, Manuel's a kid who doesn't have a whole lot of funds, so he hasn't been able to make a lot of trips. He has to take rides with guys, you know, as you've said in the past. So, you know, that's really all you have to count on. And I actually tend to agree with the idea of not really negative recruiting.
I mean, I don't disagree with it, but at some point, I think that you do have to fight fire with fire. You have to say, you know, for example, say Florida is negative recruiting you. You have to go out there and you have to fight fire with fire. You can't just sit there and take it and be the bigger man in a game like recruiting.
Well, I have a very hard time, given some of the conversations that I've had off the record in the past with Jimbo Fisher and some of the Florida State administration on this. I have a hard time believing that these guys are not, you know, if Manuel said something like that, you know, well, you know, things are a little bit of a mess, or let's say they read that interview, which I'm sure they have at this point. I can guarantee you that something gets brought up where it's like, wait, if you think we're a mess, you know, take a look at LSU again real quick. I guarantee you that is going to get said. So it's not like there's, you know, there's a moratorium on ever potentially saying anything negative. But at any rate, there's no doubt that this 2016 class, which still I think has a chance to be one of the best, if not the best, in the Jimbo Fisher tenure and maybe more, has begun taking on a little bit of water as the public perception of Florida State has sort of hit its nadir here. It's sort of cratering a little bit, and you hope that it's not going to go down any further if you're a Florida State fan, of course. But yeah, I think that it's going to be interesting to see sort of where the momentum goes from here and how that works, particularly when it looks like Dalvin Cook is going to be back on the team and will not ultimately be this is not going to wind up being resolved with a guilty plea. I think, and certainly I don't think he's going to wind up, based on the arrest affidavit and some of these other things that I saw, that I don't think there's any way that this ends up coming out negatively for him. Well, that's going to be something that you're going to see some guys, you're going to see some attacks on that, oh, if you're a star player from South Florida, then you'll get special treatment. And that's going to put them on the defensive with some players, I think, that, you know, well, you know, different situations. He didn't hit this girl, whereas, you know, the other guy did. And we have that rule that, you know, you hit a girl and you're out. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where the momentum goes from here. Where do you see the next, say, commit or two coming from in the 2016 and 2017 classes, and how do you think this starts to play out from your end? Because obviously you're in contact a lot with some of these recruits and have been talking a little bit more with some of the guys behind the scenes at Florida State.
Well, I mean, to be honest, the next commitment could come from a guy who's on campus right now, 4-star tight end Nasir Upshur. Florida State had been recruiting him prior to Nada decommitting. They were willing to take both of them. They think that highly of Upshur. So
he's actually, in some ways, he tests a little bit better in, athletically than Nauta. He's just not the ready-made dominant force that Nauta
exactly.
is.
He canceled his Michigan visit for this past weekend, and he took a visit to Florida State. Michigan was considered the leader at this point, up until Nada decommitted, and then he changed his plans and came down. So I honestly wouldn't be surprised if he committed before he left. I mean, as for the 2017 class, I still think that safety Cyrus Fagan, who is number 31 player overall in the country, will be the next commitment for that class. And I also think you could see a 2018 commitment here soon with 2018 quarterback Joey Gatewood. So he's a 4-star on scout already.
And Gateway is an important prospect for Florida State because, you know, as a 2018 quarterback and one of the top quarterbacks in that class, even though he can get a little bit more consistent, but most kids at that level can, and he's got all the tools to run what Florida State wants to run at that quarterback spot. He's an important prospect to try to get some of that momentum shifted. And it's going to be interesting to see how quickly that momentum is able to shift, as I think this is going to be a more likable Florida State team, once the public gets a little bit more view of some of the public faces or of some of the faces like Jalen Ramsey and some of these others. And this is much more of an underdog team. It's going to be interesting to see how and when the momentum reverses again. And you see this class begin to take shape a little bit more. And again, you are listening to the Unconquered podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto network. Now, we're going to turn now to the offensive side of the ball, where obviously there's a lot of pieces in play. There's a lot of question marks. This is probably the most question marks I can remember in terms of a Florida State team. And I remember last year in terms of in camp, the questions were very, very different. The questions were, you know, how well would this team really be able to build on what they'd done before? But it was kind of a boring camp last year because you knew who was going to be where. You had potential question marks at center, but you knew who was going to be there. You had question marks at the receiver position, but you knew who was going to be there. You had some questions at different spots, but there were no real battles. It wasn't a situation where you were wondering, you know, who's even going to be the contributors at this spot? Those were not the sorts of things that we were asking going into last year's camp. And those questions are everywhere on this team. At the same time, it's an extremely deep and talented team, which to me makes this a really, really fun. And that's a word that Jimbo Fisher has used repeatedly, both at ACC kickoff and in his opening press conference. He's repeatedly used the word fun to talk about this group, that he's looking forward to working with this group more than any group that he's had in a while, because he thinks it's going to be a real fun process, because they're so young, they're so passionate, and so talented that in some sense even he has no idea what to expect. And I think behind the scenes, when you talk to him a little bit, he has no idea what to expect from this team. The expectations are going to be set as they go along because they don't know what they're going to get. So let's talk a little bit about what we've got going into the camp on offense, and then a little bit in terms of initial observations. So let's talk about, say, three things and three, you know, maybe position matchups or whatever that we need to be watching as we go through camp. So what would be your three, say?
Well, right now, there's one that I didn't think would be a position that's going to be up for grabs at this point. I thought at right tackle, Chad Mavity would come out and he would have the job, but that's not been the case for the first two practices. Derek Kelly come out. He ran with the first team yesterday. He ran with the first team today. If Mavity doesn't get his butt in gear, he's going to lose that job.
Yeah, and you know I love me some Derek Kelly. Ever since he came in the recruiting class, I've loved that guy's potential. I think he can play four positions on the offensive line, a really versatile player. So it's going to be interesting to see that matchup. But yeah, who thought that the right tackle position, and if it was going to be somebody at the right tackle position, we figured it would be between Mavetti and Rubel, who looked really good actually in the spring game. But, you know, Kelly sat out. Kelly was actually, remember, the starting right guard over Wilson Bell, and then got hurt in the spring, and then Bell basically played extremely well and took that job after he went out. So it's interesting to watch what's happening there.
It definitely is. For my second one, I'm actually going to go with the entire wide receiving corps because we're trying. I have no idea who's going to start.
Yeah,
and
when
they're
we do
all going to get reps.
When we do our predictions, our Fearless Predictions podcast in next week or so, trying to project who's going to have, you know, who's going to be the leading receivers on this team is going to be impossible. We might as well draw. It's like trying to pick
Good
the
luck.
ACC Coastal.
Yep. We need the wheel of ACC that ESPN used to run and just mark it with the wide receivers.
Yeah. Now the difference is, unlike the ACC Coastal, you actually have some elite players at that receiver, you know, elite talents at that receiver position, but they're kind of cannibalizing each other. Now the good thing is you've got youth, but you've got enough depth that you should be able to get guys because of competition. You know, this is a free market system in the Jimbo Fisher world. You've got competition where those guys are going to have to be consistent to play. So you should expect better performance with the level of depth that they have across the board than you would if you just had a couple of sophomores that were playing, say.
Well, think about this. The only that wide receiving core is probably going to go at least six deep, maybe seven, depending on how some of the freshmen work out.
Well, they told me back in 2010. I remember Lawrence Dawsey and them told me back in 2010 that they really need six receivers that they can count on to run their offense the way that they want. They need a minimum of six receivers that they can count on. And then ideally they need eight. Ideally they want eight guys they can count on that they can rotate and put into different spots. And they need six. And that was back in 2010 when they had three. And now they have those numbers. And the interesting thing is going to be who those guys end up being.
Well, you could go seven deep with this wide receiving core and only see one upperclassman in Bobo Wilson.
Who actually is a better player than a lot of the fan base seems to realize. I mean, he obviously had some drops last year, but the thing that's interesting, the thing I keep bringing up with him from last year, he had the drops only after he got his bell rung and he got drilled against Miami. And after that, through the rest of the regular season, he really struggled. And having been in that position of having had my bell rung in that, and then I didn't even realize that I'd had a concussion at that point and played through it the rest of the year. It's the sort of thing that wouldn't happen as easily now, but I didn't locate the ball as well for the time after I'd got my bell rung pretty good. And I felt like that kind of happened to Bobo where he wasn't seeing the ball as well at that point. And you notice he caught the ball awfully well in the Rose Bowl. Obviously he had a fumble, but he actually was a real weapon in the Rose Bowl. So, but at the same time, he may get passed up because of the talent behind him.
Absolutely. I mean, just the amount of talent. You have high four stars in Travis Rudolph, Javon Harris, Harrison, and Auden Tate. And then you have five stars, George Campbell and Ermin Lane, just sitting there fighting for a starting job, fighting for reps.
Yeah, fighting so, just to get on the field. And exactly. The thing is, all of those guys are bigger bodies. And that's something that last year's group really lacked, particularly vertical bodies. Guys that could go deep and be a threat downfield with size. They really didn't have that. I mean, Ermin Lane has size, but he's not really the deep threat. That's where a guy like Pig Harrison and a guy like George Campbell, they suddenly offer a totally different aspect to this offense that they didn't have last year. Last year's receiving core didn't scare you over the top. This year's receiving core should. And both Everett Golson and Sean McGuire, for their, you know, they do have weaknesses. Both those guys can throw the deep ball. Both of those guys have very strong arms. And Golson in particular, I think, throws the post route about as well as anybody in the country. And you know, again, McGuire has a very strong arm as well. So you're going to see, I think, that featured with this group. And we haven't even gotten to one of the most impressive guys on the hoof in camp, which is Auden Tate. Who it's, you know, Ermin Lane is a big receiver. Pig Harrison is a big receiver. George Campbell is a big receiver. And then you put them next to Auden Tate, and you realize Tate is a giant. That kid is a mammoth receiver.
He really is. I mean, he's going to provide something that Florida State lacked last season in just an absolute person that has great size, great body control. Think of a slightly less athletic version of Calvin Benjamin.
I'm not sure how much less athletic he really is than Benjamin. I think he's – I don't think he's quite – I mean, he's not quite as – I don't think he's quite as big as Benjamin. I think he may have comparable.
He's as big as Benjamin when Benjamin came out of high school, though.
I think that's probably right. Yeah, Benjamin. By the time Benjamin was a sophomore, he started looking like he was a defensive end.
Yes,
and he did drop a little bit of weight eventually, but Benjamin may have had a little bit more lateral agility than what you have with Tate. But Tate, I think, actually is a more natural – he tracks the football a little more naturally and is a little bit more – has a little more natural body control, sort of the way Devin Smith did for Ohio State last year, where, you know, he gained a reputation as a guy who had a real feel for vertical routes to track the deep ball, that sort of thing. Tate on tape in high school sort of showed some of those traits and the ability to really naturally – track the football and to be able to turn his hips and put his foot in the ground and be able to go and snag the football really naturally with both hands. And I think he's got more natural hands than Benjamin did. Now, obviously, Benjamin wound up a first-round draft pick and really developed. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Tate. But like you said, he gives Florida State that kind of mismatch, that kind of weapon, where I don't think he's going to see the field that much because you've got enough guys that were there. George Campbell was there in the spring. You have the older guys who've been there for a while. And Jimbo Fisher's offense requires the receivers to make sight reads, to be able to understand coverages on the fly and all that a little bit more than most offenses. It's more similar to what you see from, say, Bobby Petrino or Steve Spurrier, what they put on their receivers as well. So it's harder for younger receivers to come in right away and have a huge impact in Fisher's offense. But I do think we'll see him in packages, and I especially think we'll see him down in the red zone in certain areas where those mismatches get really important.
I don't disagree. It's just there's so many good to great receivers and just so much talent on the roster that it is literally impossible. I'm going to go ahead and say it. It is impossible to pick who the starting receivers will be 2 days into camp.
I don't know that it's impossible. I think we can get a pretty good guess, but who's actually going to take the most reps, you know, in game six, and who's going to be the leading receivers is going to be an interesting question. I mean, I think Lane is going to be on the field just because he can block. Rudolph is going to be on the field. I think he's going to be at either the slot or the outside position. The question is really, you know, who fills that third role, and I think that's going to go up in the air at different points. Sometimes it's going to be Bobo in the slot. Sometimes I think we're going to see Pig Harrison on the outside to add a little bit more dynamic stuff down the field. So, you know, again, and Fisher was adamant about this in his press conference, and he really does believe this, that Florida State doesn't have a depth chart at this point. And what you see in terms of release depth charts, you kind of have to take with a grain of salt because, and we experienced this actually in the spring when we were trying to project depth charts coming into the camp, where there are so many guys that play multiple spots. So, you know, it's not like you have an X and a Y and a Z. You have a guy who plays X and Z, and then another guy who plays Z and Y, and you go down the list in terms of where they are. And the same thing is true on defense, where a guy plays both buck linebacker and defensive end, and then another guy plays, you know, the inside linebacker and buck. And so, you know, you get guys moving around so much. The way that they cross-train players, it makes it really difficult to handle that. And what they're going to do all season on both sides of the ball is move those guys around to take advantage of matchups. And they've got a lot of personnel flexibility to do it. So let's look at the third thing in terms of offensive things to watch on your list. And we'll then go to a few initial observations, and we'll go from there. And, of course, this initial list, we're leaving out the obvious quarterback battle between Golson and McGuire. Also, you know, Fisher reminded J.J. Cosentino, but I don't think either one of us expect Cosentino to win the job. But we'll leave that to talk about soon on another podcast. But what's the third non-quarterback bit?
Well, you know, you could go with the running back situation, but if Dalvin Cook comes back, that's pretty cut and dry.
And either way, because you've still got Mario Pender and Jaquez Patrick, who are both going to play a ton anyway. So, you know, that's actually one of the more settled positions on the team.
So I'm going to go with the tight end position where you and I actually disagree.
Oh yeah, you know I love me some Maven Saunders.
I know you love him, and I'm a big fan of the kids, but I think that he's still a year away from his full potential.
I think he's 2 weeks away. Well, from full potential, I think he's got about 2 years from full potential in terms of what he's going to get at Florida State, but I think he's about 2 weeks away from starting to take over that job.
I see. The thing is that for most of the season, if not all of the season, I expect to see Izzo starting. He's consistent. He's a good receiver. He has good hands, and he's an excellent blocker.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's the guy that starts, but I think the guy that ends up being in there most of the time in terms of passing downs and the guy that winds up being the featured tight end, I think that's going to be Saunders. And the reason for that, we could call this the Jimbo Fisher Kelvin Benjamin law. So, or, you know, we need to come up with a good name for this. You know, you've got maybe the Benjamin theory, something like that, because it's a very similar thing to what happened. I think what we're going to see at that position is similar to what happened when Kelvin Benjamin was a freshman and a sophomore. You remember how Benjamin was really inconsistent. He wasn't ready, but he played more than he really kind of deserved at that point. At least a lot of us thought. I don't, and there was a reason for that. What you know, if I were to put that question to you, what reason do you think Jimbo Fisher had for doing that with Kelvin Benjamin?
Oh, to get him reps, to get him prepared.
Because he's a freak.
Yes.
Which he is an absolute freak.
Saunders.
Yeah, and Saunders has the same kind of freakish upside. And so I think what happens with Saunders is, yes, Izzo's going to be the guy in front. I think Izzo's going to be the starter, just like, you know, you had with Benjamin as a sophomore, say, where, you know, he wasn't the starter, but he did play a lot more than you might expect for a guy in that position. And that's because Fisher was just waiting for the light bulb to come on, because he knew the moment that light bulb came on, he had an unusual weapon. And Saunders is like that. You talk about Nauta. Nauta's a dominant prospect, a dominant player in high school. Maybe the best high school tight end coming out in maybe a decade. I mean, he's ready-made. He will plug and play wherever he goes and be ready to be a major contributor immediately. But in terms of upside, Saunders is off the charts better than Nauta. He's bigger. He moves better. He runs better. And he's got more potential in terms of strength. He's got more upside as a blocker. But he's not as ready-made. I think this is where you see Fisher give him the Benjamin treatment and say, you know what, I'm going to ride you in practice. I'm going to kick you out of practice if you don't show the effort you need to. But you are going to be my whipping boy. But I'm going to give you extra reps and extra opportunities in games until the light bulb comes on. That's what I expect to see from Saunders.
See, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. But as for being the every down guy, I don't see it, because he can't block yet. He's not a good blocker.
he blocked better in the spring game than I expected him to. I think he's made some strides there.
He blocked better against walk-ons.
Right, but he's
when he played, that was against the walk-ons.
But it's never been about talent for him. It's never been about the ability to block. It's been about the consistency, and for him, it's been an effort issue. It's been the intensity and the focus of actually blocking the right guy the right way each time. And that seemed to improve. And the reports, you know, we got toward the end of practice at the end of spring was that was improving over at the end of practice. And if that continues to improve, if that curve continues a little bit in camp, then we're going to see a lot more of him in the fall. Now, I think Izzo's a good player. Like you said, he's a consistent player. He's a better receiver than people realize. What this allows is for Fisher to do what he really would prefer to do. Fisher wants his offense to be more tight end oriented and H-back oriented than fullback oriented. I mean, he reminded people in his press conference at the beginning of this week, at the beginning of camp, that back at LSU, he didn't really run a fullback at all until they had Jacob Hester. And Hester basically made it a mandatory thing because of his talent. And the same thing happened at Florida State with Lonnie Pryor and then Big Pad Chad. And, you know, some of these things, you had guys that put themselves on the field because they were one of the better players on the offense and could present that feature in the offense. Well, Fisher, if he has two tight ends that he can trust, even with as good a receiver group as you'll see Fisher go two tight ends. Because he loves the way that balances the offensive or the defensive front. And now you've got some things that you can do that you can't do from other formations in terms of play action and all that, and getting matchups that you want both on the outside and with tight ends. So I think we'll see more two tight end stuff, particularly next year, but I think we'll see that some this year as well.
I don't disagree. I think you'll see a lot of two tight end stuff. I'm just not so sure that it's going to be Maven when they go to two tight ends. I think you could see Jeremy Kerr come in there being that extra blocker.
I think in short yardage, I think that's what's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. And then having Izzo as the guy who could go out, you know, he could block, he could go out for a pass. It just, he's more like when you have Maven in the game, you know what you're getting.
Yeah. And at any rate,
we're not getting a blocker.
At any rate, what you do have with the situation here is you've got three tight ends, all with length and size. And in Fisher's offense, we've seen that before. I mean, O'Leary was obviously the best receiving tight end Florida State's had, but he always struggled a little bit more as an inline blocker. He was, you know, he was not a natural inline blocker, had to fight to become that, and still was not really a great inline blocker as even as a senior. We've seen what that looks like in the Fisher offense before with Kaz Porowski and the difference that he made in the running game before he went out with an injury. And you could look at the pre-Porowski injury and the post-Porowski injury numbers. I don't have them in front of me, but it's like an extra yard and a half per carry with Porowski in the offense, in Fisher's offense. And I think that's something we'll see a little bit more this year. And this team will be more run-oriented. And we will see, I think, the difference with the ability to seal the edge in this zone running game with those big tight ends. I think we're going to see a major difference and a major improvement in the running game this year as compared to last year, even with the younger offensive line. And I think that's going to be something that's going to happen regardless of which tight end or tight ends are on the field. And I think we'll see it in both short yardage and in the middle of the field. We're going to see a more productive and consistent running attack where you're seeing fewer guys getting hit in the backfield because those guys are sealing the edge well.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all.
You are listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the vSporto Network, in association with NoleDigest.com. We're now going to turn to the defensive side of the ball, talk again about three specific things to watch on the defensive side of the ball, and then we'll wrap up with some observations from camp so far. So what would your number one thing be in terms of things to look for on the defense? I know what mine is, but you go ahead with yours.
Well, I want to see who wins the starting cornerback spot opposite of Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, that's
because
a war.
I think there are three players that can go out there and could win the job right now. I've been very, very impressed with how Tavarius McFadden looks just on the hoof. I think he
looks like a sophomore. He doesn't look like a freshman.
Yes, I was a little concerned that he was going to be a little thin, wouldn't be able to, able to deal with the physicality of college football. That is completely gone now. I think he could definitely, if he gets the defense down, understands the system, I think he could definitely take that starting spot. I also think that Ryan Green, a guy who came over from the running back position last season, as the spring went on, he got better and he started understanding the nuances of the position. If he can continue that, he has the athletic ability to be a very, very good corner.
Well, and people forget Ryan Green was, when he was recruited, people forget how athletic that guy is. He's one of the better athletes on the team. I mean, you go back and you look at his spark numbers from when he was recruited. He actually has one of the top, I think, six spark scores of all the guys on the Florida State team going back to when they were recruited. So, I mean, you're talking about a really, really good athlete at that corner position. I think a lot of people forget that because he's not been able to stay healthy.
I don't disagree at all. I think that if Florida State didn't have multiple freaks at the running back position, I feel like he could have made an impact there. But I also feel like cornerback is the best position for him.
Well, size-wise, he fits a lot better at corner than at running back in Florida State's offense and defense. Now, you had a third guy as well, though, and that's the guy that I think you have pegged as the most likely starter at this point. And he's the guy that's been getting the reps with the ones, and that is
Marquez White. He's the guy who earned the starting job in the spring over Malik Jackson and Ryan Green, and so far he's held it. He's a very gifted athlete. He's actually a two-sport athlete. He used to be a two-sport athlete at Florida State. He played on the basketball team.
And he has one of the best verticals. One of the best verticals on the team.
Yes, he does have one of the best verticals on the team. He wasn't a very good basketball player, but he's a great defender, which is, something.
Which, I mean, a few years ago in Leonard Hamilton's Florida State basketball program, might have been able to get on the field, but not anymore. That's something we're looking forward to the podcast come January to talk a little bit about that, because this is going to be a pretty good Florida State basketball team as well. But he's going to be an interesting player at that position. And actually, the performance of he and Ryan Green at that spot wound up getting Malik Jackson moved to the boundary side to back up Jalen Ramsey. And Ramsey, of course, is going to move around in the secondary. So there will probably be some times where Jackson's actually on the field to let Ramsey be at the star position or move to a safety spot or different things depending on what they want, because they're going to have packages where Ramsey's going to be lined up at the star. There's going to be times where they're going to put him at safety. They're going to move him around depending on down and distance and opponent and matchups to use his skills the best. Now, obviously, he's going to be at boundary corner probably 80% of the time or 90% of the time, but that other 10% he's going to move around. And he's going to blitz a bunch off that boundary side, which is going to make for some interesting situations, potential blindside hits with a very fast, very big corner off the edge. It's going to be very interesting to see how they use him this year, because they're designing the defense to feature him, which is something that I would do if I were in their case. I think he's the second best defensive back in Florida State history, or at least has the potential to be that with the kind of season that I expect him to have this year. So let's then talk about the second and third things to watch on defense. I'll go ahead and contribute the second one. To me, one of the other three things to watch here. So we'll have this number two on our list is looking at the edge players on the defense. So who's going to play where? Who's going to play what minutes? What kind of impact those guys are going to have on the edge is all completely unknown at this point. Last year, obviously, at the edge positions you had, and the reason I say edge positions is Florida State plays a hybrid defense enough that they don't really have a true defensive end or outside linebacker spot in sort of a more traditional way. They have a lot of hybrid players on the edge, and who those guys are and what their responsibilities are is going to be a little bit different depending on down and distance and again, personnel and all that. So it's going to be interesting to see who's actually at those edge spots. Last year it was Mario Edwards, who, you know, was an early second round draft pick, huge talent, but also huge eating, especially between his sophomore and junior years. He came into camp at about 315, and you can't play the edge at over three bills, in that hybrid role the way that you really need to. I mean, he was able to make some plays. He was dominant when he wanted to be at different points, particularly moving forward when he had his hand down. But they were vulnerable on the edge, and particularly on the other side where they had DeMarcus Walker and they had Chris Kasher. And Walker, you know, Walker's got some tools that you like. I mean, he's got some explosiveness moving forward. He's never been a guy that moves laterally especially well. But He showed effort. He was a guy that, you know, was able to at least take on some blocks and all that. But teams were able to run around to the outside a little bit. And then you had Kasher, who he made a couple plays against Clemson. Actually, a couple plays that helped save that game against Clemson. If he doesn't make a critical tackle down on the goal line before that actually set up the snap over Deshaun Watson's head, they lose that game. And he was in on the tackle in overtime to end the game. But aside from that, Chris Kasher was pretty much, he looked lost out there most of the year. So
that waste of space would be the term that I would use.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was trying to be polite here, but, you know, Kasher was disappointing last year. And we, you know, you and I had sort of prepared people to see that going into the year. We had kind of expected that from Kasher, but I think even by our standards, he was a little bit disappointing last year. And he enters this, the interesting thing is that he enters this camp buried on the depth chart, which is where ultimately he should be, given what we've seen from him. And instead, we've got a series of young guys on the edge. Now, Walker has stepped forward and with a little bit of a different approach in how they're coaching the edge with Brad Lowing as opposed to Sal Sunseri. They're a little bit more aggressive in how they're teaching these guys to move forward. You're going to see a little bit more hands on the ground rather than guys standing up and catching as much, which is what you saw with Sunseri. But, you know, Walker seems to have really benefited from that change. And then you've got the three sophomores who are going to be really interesting this year. With Lorenzo Featherston, who's put on about 15, maybe 20 pounds. It's interesting to see how much he'll stick during camp. They're going to obviously be feeding him like a stuffed turkey as much as they can all camp to try to keep weight on him during the season. And then Jacob Pugh, who is going to be on the field. You know, he was one of the best players in the spring until he got hurt. He's going to be on the field a bunch. He also has put on about 15 pounds from last year. And then a guy who didn't need to put on weight but just needed to get consistent, Ricky Leonard, who is one of my favorite recruits from that class. Those guys are all going to be there as far as that edge position. And all three of those guys offer some length and the ability to move laterally, particularly against spread stuff, in a way that they didn't have last year. So that's the thing that's going to be interesting to me, is looking at who plays where at the edge, whether or not they're able to get the kind of pass rush that you would hope for. And that's where Featherston, who to me the comparison for Featherston is Javon Kearse physically. That's basically the guy's ceiling. And then you've got Pugh, and you've got Walker, and you've got Leonard. These guys all have some length, and with the exception of Walker, have the ability to move laterally in a way that should be interesting. If they can get a little better on the edge against the run and get a little bit more pass rush, which, you know, actually any pass rush might be a little bit more than they had last year.
Hard to be worse.
This is a much, much different defense. You get a little bit of pass rush from those 6-7 guys. You put, you know, Leonard and Featherston out there. You put Pugh and Featherston out there with that explosiveness, and you have a pass rush off the edge, the defense looks different. So that's my one thing, really, to watch. That's got to be in the three. What would your third thing be?
Well, the third thing for me, you can either go with the safety or the defensive tackle positions. I mean, at defensive tackle, you really know what you're getting. So I'm actually going to go with safety. And I want to know how long it's going to take for Derwin James to replace either Nate Andrews or Tyler Hunter at the safety position.
Well, and actually, it's not even Tyler Hunter right now, because the guy that's actually starting at that spot is 42.
Yeah, that's. I think that he isn't going. Like, he's only starting right now because Hunter was limited today. They're, because of his knee, they're taking and holding him back. It's the same thing with Reggie. They limited his reps today. He's going to go full go tomorrow. So I would expect Tyler Hunter to be in that starting role again. But I don't think any of them can hold off Derwin James. He's just the biggest freak of an athlete that Florida State might have on this team next to Josh Sweat.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be. I think ultimately it's a matter of time before Derwin's on the field. It's just going to be interesting to see whose job he takes. And I do think what you're going to see is a little bit more Nate Andrews in the money role. I think Nate Andrews will be in the money role probably half the season. About 50% of the snaps, he'll be in the money role.
Which he excels at. He's really, really good.
He has an NFL future in the box. You know, I don't think he's a high draft choice, but he's a very high character player. He's an excellent leader. He has some of the best hands I've ever seen. The guy catches the football. It's something that stuck out even in his high school tape. He's got great hands, and he's got he's got great instincts. And in that money role, he can be extremely disruptive. And given that Northrop, that's one of the stories of camp, is that Northrop is actually going to take reps. So I'm going to have to eat my words a little bit here. He's basically on a normal schedule coming into camp, which means, you know, that's very good for the defense. And you know, you were right on this all along. I mean, I didn't believe what we were hearing, but you bought it, and you were right on this about Northrop being right there. But the thing is, Northrop struggled in coverage before the ACL. So I would expect to see Northrop really be a one or two down guy and in that role, and see a lot more Nate Andrews in that money role. And that's where you see that safety spot open up for Derwin James. That's in my opinion, how that's going to work.
I think, I mean, Florida State would benefit. Florida State's base defense right now for the past couple years has been the nickel, the 4-2-5. Florida State would benefit this year going more to a 4-1-6 and playing that dime defense.
Yeah, with Andrews in the box as an extra linebacker, basically, which is what he is in that money role. And I think we're going to see that. I think their base package, I think they'll be 4-2-5 base against your bigger teams. But I think against a lot of your spread teams, like against a Clemson, I think we're going to see a 4-1-6 more than anything else. I think that's going to be their base against your better spread teams. Which is what they did, you know, going back, if you think about how they did things in 2013, they did a lot of that type of thing. Actually, what they did in that year is they did a lot of 3-2, a lot of 3-2-6, where you'd have the two Smiths, and then you'd have Andrews at the money roll, on top of the base 4-2-5, and a lot of times they'd have Telvin and then Andrews in for Terrence Smith in the 4-2-5 when they'd go to certain passing situations for what was really effectively a 4-1-6. So I think we'll see a little bit more of that, and I think that's where the defense really excels. Before we conclude, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about a few observations, just very quickly, that you've seen from the first 2 days of camp, and anything that stuck out to you or surprised you as you've been an observer the first couple days.
Well, if you've been on our site at all, you've seen the photo galleries we put up, and it's just those pictures can't even just confer how big this freshman class is. It is honestly amazing between, you know, not just the early enrollee guys, because you look at Darvin Taylor, he's bigger than Derek Nnadi is.
Yeah, he's not as big as in the lower half as Nnadi, though. Nnadi's got almost a Corey Simon butt going on here.
Yeah, but I mean, you take a look at Darvin's calves, and they're bigger than Nnadi's is. It's just, and
yeah,
you
he's
also
a solidly built kid.
Yes, he is a solidly built kid, and then you've got Cole Minshew, who, I mean, we didn't even get to talk about him earlier, but he's going to be making some noise if he at center.
Yeah, that actually might be the biggest surprise to me, along with Northrop being ready to go. That might be the biggest surprise to me of camp so far, is that Minshew has been getting second team reps at center. And, you know, we'd heard that Trickett was serious about potentially getting this guy on the field, you know, as a freshman, that he felt he could contribute as a freshman. I didn't think that meant actually starting as a freshman necessarily, and I certainly didn't think it would be at center. I thought he's more of a guard. But it's pretty clear that Trickett feels like he might be able to get the center position fixed by putting Minshew there, which we were kind of penciling Alec Eberle in there. But Minshew is an interesting name to put in that spot.
If he can get out there, if he can learn the offensive line calls and understand exactly what's going on, he has more talent than probably anybody on the line except for Roderick Johnson.
I'm not sure he's quite there, but you may have a case. But boy, he's a strong kid. When he gets his hands on you,
and he's mean.
Oh boy, he is a Trickett lineman.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and wrap on that, because that's something that Florida State fans are always happy to hear about, is Rick Trickett lineman, which is something that's hilarious to say now, given all the ridiculous criticism of maybe the best offensive line coach in the country going back in 2011, 2012 era. But now these Rick Trickett linemen are doing their work. In any case, this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the vSporto Network, in association with NoleDigest.com. You can follow us, follow Wayne and me on Twitter. We're easy to find. You can always visit us at NoleDigest.com and at vSporto.com and the respective apps. Until next time, and that's going to be real soon, this is Jason Staples for Wayne McGahee III. Thanks for listening.
I made this.